Have you ever felt your heart pound before clicking send on a difficult email? That moment when your palms sweat before confronting a colleague, or when you rehearse what you'll say to your partner for the 100th time but never actually say it? We've all been there. These moments aren't just uncomfortable, they're defining. How we handle them shapes our careers, our relationships, and ultimately who we become. Yet most of us stumble through these exchanges with no real framework, relying on instinct alone. What if there was a better way? What if every difficult conversation, from firing an employee to telling your mother-in-law she's overstepping, actually followed the same hidden structure? Understanding this structure doesn't make hard conversations easy, but it transforms them from emotional minefields into navigable terrain. Every difficult exchange actually contains three simultaneous conversations, whether you realize it or not. The first is the what happened conversation, the surface-level dispute about facts and blame. The second is the feelings conversation, the emotions bubbling underneath that we often try to suppress. The third is the identity conversation, the internal questioning about what this situation means about who we are. Consider Jack, who worked all night designing a financial prospectus, canceling dinner with his daughter to meet the deadline. When his boss Michael harshly criticized a slightly misaligned chart, their exchange revealed all three layers. On the surface, they argued about the chart's placement. Beneath that, Jack felt unappreciated, while Michael felt anxious about investor reactions. Deeper still, Jack questioned his professional competence, while Michael worried about his judgment in hiring. We typically make three critical errors across these conversations. In what happened, we assume we possess the complete truth when we actually hold just one perspective. In feelings, we either bury emotions until they explode or let them dominate destructively. In identity, we ignore how the situation threatens our self-image, making us defensive and reactive. The breakthrough comes from shifting from trying to deliver your message to genuinely trying to learn. This isn't about winning or changing minds. It's about understanding different perspectives, exploring feelings together, and managing the identity issues that make us vulnerable.
When disagreements arise, we see ourselves as reasonable while viewing others as selfish or irrational. Yet both sides usually make sense within their own narratives. When Rory replaces her elderly Aunt Bertha's old mattress, she sees herself thoughtfully upgrading uncomfortable furniture. Aunt Bertha sees Rory insensitively discarding a cherished connection to her late husband. Both perspectives are valid. We see differently for two reasons. First, we have different information, like a child noticing only trucks in a parade while his uncle sees everything else. We notice what matters to us based on our experiences. Second, we interpret information differently based on implicit rules we've internalized. When Carolina complained about restaurant prices despite not paying, her coworker was frustrated until learning Carolina's reactions stemmed from childhood poverty. Similarly, roommates arguing about meeting times often reflect different implicit rules about punctuality versus flexibility. Beyond seeing different worlds, we judge others by what we assume their intentions were. When someone hurts us accidentally, we forgive readily. When we believe they meant harm, forgiveness becomes nearly impossible. Yet intentions exist only in someone's mind. We can never know them with certainty. This creates two costly mistakes: assuming we know others' intentions when we don't, and believing that explaining our good intentions erases the negative impact of our actions. In a famous 1946 experiment, people watched two circles moving on a screen and described them as chasing each other, attributing human-like motivations to simple shapes. This mental shortcut helped our ancestors assess dangers, but creates problems now because we can't actually see into others' minds. We typically assume intentions based on how actions affect us. When someone hurts us, we tend to believe they meant harm. Technology compounds this. Without tone or body language, messages become ambiguous. Interestingly, we show remarkable inconsistency. When your partner forgets dry cleaning, they're irresponsible. When you forget airline tickets, you're overworked. Moving beyond who's right requires embracing the and stance, recognizing that understanding someone's perspective doesn't mean abandoning your own. To avoid intention traps, recognize the difference between impact and intent. Ask yourself, what did they actually do? What was the impact on me? What assumption am I making about their intentions? When communicating, speak to the impact while inquiring about intentions. When you commented on my eating cake, I felt embarrassed. What were you trying to accomplish? The most useful question becomes not who's right, but now that we understand each other, how do we manage this together? When things go wrong, we instinctively blame someone, but blame inhibits understanding and problem solving. It judges backward. Who caused this? How should they be punished? This triggers defensiveness. Contribution looks forward. How did we each contribute? How can we change it? In relationships, problems rarely have a single cause. Like a baseball pitcher, catcher, and batter all contributing to a pitch's outcome, our interactions form systems where everyone plays a part. While blame serves functions legally, it carries costs. Once punishment enters, learning truth becomes harder. When solving practical problems, arguing about blame wastes time. Four commonly overlooked contributions, avoiding the issue until now, being unapproachable or being perceived that way, differences in background or preferences, and problematic role assumptions. Consider a family. 3-year-old George acts out, mom asks dad to intervene, dad yells, mom criticizes dad's yelling, George finds another way to get attention. Everyone contributes to the pattern. Map the contribution system by examining what each person adds without focusing on wrongdoing. Taking responsibility for your contribution early prevents others from using it defensively later. The breakthrough? Stop asking, whose fault is this? And start asking, how did we create this together? And how can we fix it together? Feelings sit at the heart of difficult conversations, yet we constantly try to frame them out. This fails because unacknowledged emotions don't disappear. They leak through tone and body language or burst out destructively. Emotional outbursts often result not from expressing feelings too frequently, but too rarely. Unexpressed feelings also block our ability to listen, drawing our attention inward when we need to focus outward. Recognizing our own emotions is harder than we assume. Uncomfortable emotions masquerade as manageable ones. Contradictory feelings appear singular, and feelings transform into judgments. Brad thought he only felt angry about his mother's job search prodding, but digging deeper revealed a spectrum: hopelessness and fear about the search, annoyance mixed with appreciation for her concern, and both shame and pride about his choices. Attributions aren't feelings, though we mistake them as such. "I feel like you're self-absorbed" is a judgment, not a feeling. When Brad acknowledges feeling both angry and appreciative, both ashamed and proud, he creates depth that moves conversations forward. Even with leverage like Ben, who's already accepted another job, people fear difficult conversations. Ben's anxiety stems from his identity as a loyal person, modeled after his Marine father. Telling his supportive mentor boss he's leaving makes him question, "Am I really loyal or just another person betraying someone for money?" Our anxiety often comes not from facing others, but from facing ourselves. These interactions can disrupt our sense of who we are or highlight what we hope we are but fear we're not. Three identity issues commonly surface. Am I a good person? Am I competent? Am I worthy of love? The biggest vulnerability creator is all-or-nothing thinking. I'm either competent or incompetent, good or evil, worthy of love or not. This hypersensitivity to feedback leaves two poor choices: denial, clinging to a purely positive identity with no room for feedback, or exaggeration, completely flipping our self-image. Maybe I'm not creative. I'll probably never amount to anything. Managing identity issues requires accepting three truths. You will make mistakes. Your intentions are complex. You have contributed to the problem. Let go of controlling others' reactions. You cannot and shouldn't try. The more comfortable you become with complexity in your own identity, the less threatening difficult conversations become. The beginning of a difficult conversation offers the greatest leverage to influence its direction. When we jump in from our own perspective, we trigger the reactions we hope to avoid.
Every difficult conversation includes an invisible third story, the perspective a neutral observer would describe, acknowledging each side without taking sides. With roommates arguing about dishes, the third story would be, we have different preferences around when dishes are done and different standards for cleanliness. This contains no judgment. It simply captures the difference, allowing both to engage without defensiveness. After describing the problem from the third story, extend an invitation to joint problem solving. Once you've established this foundation, listening becomes your most powerful tool. Shift your internal stance from you need to understand to help me understand. Employ three key skills: inquiry, paraphrasing, and acknowledgement. Ask questions solely to learn, paraphrase to check your understanding. Acknowledge feelings before moving to problem solving. Unacknowledged feelings wander around the conversation, causing trouble until they get recognition. Eventually, the other person needs to hear your story too. Your task isn't to persuade, but to express what you see, why you see it that way, how you feel, and who you are. Begin with what matters most. Don't present conclusions as the truth. Distinguish facts from opinions. Share where your conclusions come from. Avoid always and never. The challenge is that the other person likely hasn't read this playbook. Taking the lead means reframing what they say into constructive concepts, remembering you can't move forward until they feel heard, and naming frustrating patterns when necessary. Once you've sorted the three conversations, move to problem solving, gathering information, creating options that meet both sides' concerns, and finding fair resolutions. The conversations we avoid fester, creating distance and resentment. Those we engage courageously become the foundation for deeper connection. Every difficult conversation is an opportunity, not just to solve a problem, but to strengthen a relationship and understand someone more fully. When you shift from avoiding these moments to engaging them skillfully, you transform not just individual conversations, but the entire quality of your relationships.